The champions from the Sleeper Wire Fantasy Football Show will help you win your fantasy football championship. Sleeper Wire, Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Sleeper Wire on Dash Talk.
Welcome everybody to the Sleeper Wire Show. I am your host Nick Sumrall. With me today are my co-hosts Professor Chris.
Hey, what's up guys?
And we've got Lucas back on the show. Welcome back, Lucas.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Guys, this is an exciting show to be a part of. I am super pumped to be doing this show because it is just week one is almost in the books and a lot to talk about. I mean, there's so much going on this weekend. My thoughts and prayers go with the people who are dealing with Hurricane Irma, the aftermath of that. And I'm not trying to make light of the situation, but it felt like a lot of fantasy teams got also hit by Hurricane Irma this weekend. I mean, my goodness, there was a lot of, I want to say, disappointment going on this week. Lucas, what did you think?
A lot of unpredictability, for sure. only so much preparation can a person do, and even with all the prep in the world, you're not going to be able to predict that Alex Smith, Stafford, Wentz, and Tyrod Taylor are four out of the top five QBs going into Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable just what we have to discuss here. Chris, what is your biggest takeaway from what we've gotten so far to week one?
My biggest takeaway is that people are overreacting like I've never, ever seen before. And Just from 1 week. I mean, I was on Facebook on a fantasy football page earlier this morning, and some guy, this was a legitimate post, not trolling or anything. Do I drop Tom Brady for Alex Smith? Right? Do I trade Le'Veon Bell for Kareem Hunt? Do I drop T.Y. Hilton? Just way overreacting. It's like, guys, it's week one. Brady's gonna be fine. Do not drop it for Alex Smith. I know it was just a down week for nearly everybody. Only two quarterbacks had more than two touchdowns, and it was Alex Smith and Matthew Stafford. Everybody's going to be fine.
But guys, we got so much to dig into. It's unbelievable. So let's kick off with your hot topics from this week. So to get us started, I want to go through the players you guys probably had in your lineups that, you know, did well for you this week. And I'm not going to cover the Thursday night game because we've talked about that already. Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill were studs, you know, probably in your lineups. Congratulations if they were. You probably will win this week. So unless you had the guys who didn't perform for you, and I'm going to have a list of those guys as well, and that's a longer list. But we'll see. So yeah, maybe it didn't win just with having Kareem Hunt. I don't know, but it's very possible.
And you said, let's see, one thing I wanted to touch on, you were talking about defenses. Do you remember any week in any recent memory where eight defensive touchdowns were scored in 1 week? Eight. Seven different teams scored a defensive touchdown, which is – it's unreal.
I mean, it's unreal with that. And then, you know, the amount of sacks that were being scored. I mean, you know, between the Jaguars and Steelers, they had 17 sacks. And that's just two defenses.
It was a crazy, crazy defensive week.
Right. So, I mean, defenses were unbelievable. So if you had one of these type of defenses, you know, whether it was Jaguars, Steelers, Ravens, Rams, Carolina, you had, what are some other ones?
Philadelphia was amazing. They had so many. There was so much pressure. It just seemed like the whole game, Kirk Cousins was just on his heels. That was something to watch.
Yeah, Philadelphia. I mean, it was impressive to say the least. What was happening this week with the defenses? And you know, if you're, I don't know, a lot of leagues are different with the way defenses score points, but you know, most of them, yeah, okay, they lose a little yardage, you know, for yardage, but I mean, with all the turnovers and sacks and touchdowns, forget it. They were the stars. They were the stars this week outside of Kareem Hunt. But let's go on. Let's go to the guys who probably did well for you. So I got a short list here. There's some names I'm probably missing. But Antonio Brown, Golden Tate, Jordy Nelson, Zach Ertz, LeSean McCoy, Ezekiel Elliott. Those are the guys that stood out outside of the Thursday night game and, of course, whatever's happening in the Monday night games. They performed pretty much on how we expected. Maybe some people didn't see Zach Ertz coming. I know, you know, our boy Professor Chris here and a lot of
someone
guys,
did.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people in our team that saw Zach Ertz doing well. At first, I wasn't sold, but then I had a talk with Chris, and he kind of sat me down and said, listen, this is what you need to know about Zach Ertz.
And yeah, I sat down on my kitchen chair, and I patted my knee, and Nick sat down right on it, and I said, let's have a little talk here.
I'd probably break your knee, but that's okay. but yeah, I mean, so we've been, you know, as a whole, Sleepwire has been, you know, pushing for Zach Ertz and having him as your tight end, grabbing him late. And if you did, kudos to you, because he got 8 catches for 93 yards.
That is PPR gold in the 8th round.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, with that being said, you know, Chris, is this one of your guys that you think is somebody maybe we should go a little further into? Or is there another guy you liked from this group or outside of this group from this weekend that you were impressed by? And that's as far as guys that, you know, were more than likely in your lineup.
More than likely in my lineup. Well, I know Zach Ertz was in every one of my lineups. But another guy who I've been talking up, and this was back when also when we were doing the mock draft shows and Metal Mock Mondays and everything, another guy I'm trying to get on every team is one of the guys that you mentioned, and that's Golden Tate, 10 for 107. He picked up exactly where he left off. Golden Tate is just – he's great in PPR. This was a fantastic start. I can't imagine any better way for this guy to start the season going off – like if you relate it to what he did last year. Like last season was an atrocious start. But this season, I mean, 12 targets, that was a third out of all players, all receivers yesterday. And just – he's just super impressive. And I think the Lions have a – they're going to have a really good passing offense. And I think Matthew Stafford, who also went off this week – could finish in the top 10 this year. Just all the weapons he's got.
I think that you're right with that. I think that Stafford, he's ready to earn that new paycheck that he has coming his way. And with the rookie that's there and with the help in the backfield, I've been down on Ameer Abdullah and up on Theo Riddick, and I thought Theo Riddick looked pretty dang good.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a lot to like from the Lions offense. I mean, there's one guy that in our recent great debate that we got really into, that's Kenny Golladay. You know, I was on that with Professor Chris. So there was a lot of information there. Definitely going to be a waiver wire target to look at this week. But you guys can check that out. It's already out. So go listen to it after the show, or hopefully you listen to it beforehand and got a lot of information there. You know, outside of the Lions, for me, one of the things I was impressed with is that, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, despite the hype of him missing the season, he stayed the course of what we expected. You know, 24 attempts, 104 on the ground. What was it, about 30 in the air, if I'm not mistaken? I don't have the receiving.
5 for 36, I believe.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, 5 for 36. I mean, you know, that's a pretty good day, especially when you consider the other of the, you know, quote-unquote top three running backs that were projected this year, which we'll get into in a little bit. But, you know, Elliott played well. The whole Dallas offense pretty much played as expected, I would say, maybe outside of a couple disappointments. What about you, Lucas? Was there any guy maybe that people had in their lineups that you were like, yeah, that worked out just about as expected or better than I expected?
Well, two people that I've been really high on this season are LeSean McCoy, which is a pretty evident one. Everyone likes LeSean McCoy, and Todd Gurley. Mike Tolbert seems to plague me whenever I like a running back. I was really high on Stewart 2 years ago, and between him and Cam, I felt that Jonathan Stewart was not reaching his real potential, and now Tolbert sitting here behind LeSean McCoy. He gave us a pretty good scare when he went down on the half-yard line, and I have red zone, and they were not giving any updates as to his status, and they didn't show another Bills offensive snap for the rest of the day, which scared me because I just was getting nothing. And then my other one is Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley looked okay rushing. He was getting no help from his line at all. There was defenders in the backfield as soon as he was touching the ball on several plays, which had his yards per carry down pretty low. But when they got him in the flats, he did pretty well. He was 5 for 6 and 56 yards. So he was catching everything that was coming his way, and he was getting 10-yard chunks pretty consistently. So if they can get him a little bit of running room and a few holes open, I think that you're going to see Todd Gurley going to finish very strong this year. I don't think it's a stretch whatsoever to say that he's going to finish as a top six back if he remains healthy, which is for every player.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, another thing me and Chris talked about, you know, it was Kenny Golladay versus Cooper Kupp on this recent great debate. So, you know, I talked about the Rams offense. You know, this was this is an offense that I'm not going to overreact. I'm not going to say, oh, my God, this offense is, you know, fantasy gold or anything. But they have pieces there. And Todd Gurley's certainly the centerpiece of that offense. So you want to, you know, not that he's on waivers, but, you know, hopefully you were able to draft him at a decent value. And maybe he's your RB2. But even if he's your RB1, I think this is going to be a better year for Todd Gurley going forward. What about you, Chris? You agree?
Yeah, Todd Gurley, I mean, I want to see more production out of him. 19 carries and only 40 yards, but he did get a touchdown. He did get more involved in the passing game, 5 catches for 56 yards on 6 targets. I did like what I see, and I think it justifies that second-round draft position for him.
Right, yeah. I mean, listen, you guys can get more information about the Rams from the grape debate. That's all I'm going to say about that because we're not going to cover Rams offense the whole show. We got a lot more to cover. Let's get into the guys who probably crapped your bed. Hopefully you didn't have too many of these guys on one team that you lost this week. But if you had 2, maybe 3 of these guys, which is a realistic possibility, ouch. Let's just say that. And I'm not listing all the guys. There were way too many. It's including the quarterbacks. My goodness, quarterbacks were really bad this week, but I don't even have them in the list here because I'm sure there's few that just stick out on the top of your mind. But let's get to it. So there's Dez Bryant, Greg Olsen, DeMarco Murray, Alshon Jeffrey, Kelvin Benjamin, Jimmy Graham, and of course the golden boy Le'Veon Bell, just to name a few, as I said. These are guys that, man, they did not perform as expected. Chris, what's your biggest takeaway from this list or the guys who did not perform that were in your lineup?
My biggest takeaway is that you cannot start Dez Bryant against the Giants. I mean, Janoris Jenkins has shut him down 2 straight years, and you know he's obviously an elite receiver, but he's not someone who you want to have in your starting lineup when they're playing New York.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Dez could not compete with Janoris Jenkins. He had his number the entire game. It was not pretty. Do you worry about Dez going up against Josh Norman 2 times this year as well?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Dez has a really hard schedule. I think he's got the hardest schedule out of any number one wide receiver. And, you know, he's someone that I would actually consider going out and trying to buy cheap right now. He's at Denver next week and then at Arizona, and then he's got the Rams in week 4. So it's not going to be an easy 3 games for him. So I think if you can buy him for pretty cheap and you get him like as a flex play, I think that's pretty great. But it's going to be hard to trust him to put up wide receiver one numbers for a good part of this season.
Yeah, I'm concerned. Lucas, what do you think of Dez Bryant?
Dez Bryant is someone that I have been down on. I have shares in him in one league. I'm a Cowboys fan. From what I saw last season, Dak Prescott relied heavily on his feet, on Ezekiel Elliott, and his short passes to Cole Beasley and Jason Witten. That was their game plan, and it worked well. Having Dez for a big, you know, for a big play is there, but I don't think that the volume is going to be there for Dez that you would want to see out of your wide receiver one. I know it's tough to say that because Dez is this guy that we all have built in our minds as a wide receiver one based on his talent. And based on his talent, he is unquestioned. He is one of the 12 best wide receivers in the league. But when your team also has one of the best three running backs and the best O-line on the team and a mobile quarterback, they aren't going to need you as much as they would have with a Tony Romo and a McFadden as your running back.
You know, so here's something I want to talk about. You know, Le'Veon Bell, we know who he is. We know the stud he is. We know we know who he is when he's on the field. He wasn't that guy this week. I am pretty sure that we have nothing to worry about. But, you know, he did hold out during the whole training camp and preseason. I mean, do you think, Chris, he's just going to be a little slow getting back into football shape? Or maybe, do you think this was just a fluky game?
You know, I think that he does need some time to get back into football shape. And I think that's what this game was, especially because it was the Browns. They were probably pretty sure they were going to win. I actually called this, I think, during our second Dash show a few weeks ago, where we brought up Le'Veon Bell because he was going to be coming out after his little tiny little holdout or whatever. And I said he might need a game. And I think you and Mickey both called me crazy for saying that Le'Veon Bell might not be in game shape. I think this was that game that he needed. I mean, 10 carries, only 3 receptions. I think they were probably easing him in.
First off, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember laughing at you or anything like that. That probably that must be Mickey. Mickey was probably like that. I mean, he's kind of a douche that way. But so you're thinking though that like this was it and like he'll be back to himself next week. I mean, just to give some peace of mind to some of these people who have Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. I mean, there's no reason to trade him for anything less than someone else's number one and number two. It's still Le'Veon Bell. I mean, nothing has changed. They had to ease him into a game that they knew they were going
to
win.
Lucas, I want to talk to you about some of these quarterbacks before we move on into the injuries real quick. So,
sure.
You know, Andy Dalton, Eli Manning, you know, just to name a couple of the really bad quarterbacks. Russell Wilson is another one came to mind. I mean, these guys.
Well, I started Andy Dalton in a league, and he got me like -3 points, and I still am projected to win. That's how crazy this week one was.
Did you have Kareem Hunt?
I did not have Kareem Hunt, but I'm pretty sure I'm gonna take this one. So that's pretty good. But yeah, I mean, I don't remember the last time a quarterback on his own had 5 turnovers.
Yeah. Lucas, like, are you? Like, out of the quarterbacks that did bad this week, do you think that there's going to be, like, somebody who's going to just, you know, who's just had a down week? Or do you think this is a guy's, like, this is how they're going to be?
I mean, there's 3 that I'm looking at here. Well, I mean, I guess there's 4. But there's 3 in particular that I'm looking at that I think will bounce back. Eli Manning, we know that his production anymore is heavily tied to Odell Beckham. So when Odell's back, you're going to see Eli back at more normal Eli numbers. Kirk Cousins, I think that he's dealing with the loss of Garcon and DeSean Jackson and still getting into rhythm with Terrell Pryor and Crowder and Reed, which a couple of those guys are banged up. They also have Josh Doctson. I think that Kirk Cousins will be fine. And then Russell Wilson, I love Russell Wilson and his talent. That O-line scares me. Mm. They are not giving him any time at all. And that's why they have Russell Wilson, is because he's able to still make plays even without an O-line most of the time. But that scares me. He's going to have games that are big and are Russell Wilson and what we expected being drafted as the number 8 or average of about a number 8 off the board this season. But there's a lot of work to make up there.
Boy, when you see – I'm looking at the rankings for week one so far. This is ranked by passing yards. When you see Mike Glennon, who had 213 passing yards above Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, and Russell Wilson, you just go – What is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird week. I mean, Alex Smith isn't finishing as the number one again. DeShone Kizer isn't going to be the number 7 quarterback this season. Just an odd week. Carson Wentz isn't going to be number 3. Stafford isn't going to be number 2. Just a really, really down week for quarterbacks.
A really, really down and weird week. All right, let's run through some of these injuries. We're not going to discuss every single one. We'll let you know what happened. But we'll, some of the implications here we'll discuss. But really, we're not going to get detailed into every single one, guys, because there were a lot. So the injury news, David Johnson's the biggest one that I feel like we do need to discuss a bit. So David Johnson, right now, the news came out as a Monday. It's expected to be 12 weeks, maybe earlier. I mean, it's still up in the air, but the best we have right now is that it could be 12 weeks. I don't think it's going to be any shorter than first off, I'll tell you right now, he ain't coming back next week. You know, I'll tell you what I think they might do. I'm going to try to play, psychic here. I'm going to see if I can predict this one. I remember when we had the report come out saying that the Patriots have Deion Lewis on the trade block. I think he could be landing in Arizona in light of this news about David Johnson. Not that, of course, I think Deion Lewis is anywhere close to what David Johnson is, but as far as a pass catching back, Deion Lewis is one of the best when healthy. I think he would be a good fit there in his place, and maybe they re-sign Chris Johnson, too, to be first and second down back. And maybe they have a Deion Lewis pass catching back there to kind of like bring in two backs to kind of replace their best in one.
Yeah, but Andre Ellington is a receiving back. I mean, they tried that experiment in training camp where they were going to move Ellington to wide receiver. It didn't pan out, but he's still the pass catching option there.
It's right. True, but I think they know what they have in Ellington, and I don't think they like what they have in Ellington. Otherwise, why not have him as their he's not listed as their RB, the second RB on the depth chart. He's not behind. Right now, Kerwin Williams would be behind him, but I don't think that's going to be the situation. Especially if he's going to be out for 12 weeks, David Johnson, I definitely see them making some kind of move to bring somebody in.
I think they're going to re-sign Chris Johnson. They just let him go. There's already talk that there's a chance that they can. I think he's going to come in and be serviceable, and he'd be a guy to pick up.
And Chris Johnson already knows their system. Exactly. He already knows their pass protecting schemes. He has not been great, but at least been competent, and he will just fill right into that role, likely without missing a beat. And they have Kerwin Williams and Andre Ellington, like we were already talking about. So I don't expect much from that offense going forward. They didn't look that good to me. I have Larry Fitz in PPR. I'm content with that. There's not really anyone else that I want on this team right now. Kerwin Williams, as of right now, without Chris Johnson being signed, is going to be the player that you want to own. I think that he is going to be volume-based, but you're only going to get about 50, you can only expect to get about 50% at best of what you were going to get from David Johnson.
Yeah, I think Larry Fitzgerald's the only guy who's really worth having.
Yeah, it's a scary time as a David Johnson owner, for sure. So we will keep you guys updated as we get the news. Always reaching out to us on Twitter at SleeperWire Show. You can reach out to us, on SleeperBot, Fantasy Life apps. We'll give you all the details towards the end of the show. But let's continue on. So some other news, guys. Odell Beckham didn't play in Sunday night's game, and neither did the rest of the Giants. I mean, they were they were virtually invisible. Brandon Marshall was – I hardly saw him on the field. At least that's what it looked like, because he only got one catch for 10 yards.
With the last Lucas, 20 seconds of the game to go.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what was going on there?
Brandon Marshall did not look that great last year. He was dropping passes. Granted, he was with the Jets, and the QB play was awful there. I haven't seen anything to show me that he is in sync with Eli. He didn't really show me anything in the preseason except for the fact that he's getting old and he's still injury prone. I'm not, you know, I didn't draft Marshall in a single league. I told everyone not to take Marshall unless it was falling to you and after the 8th, 9th, 10th round, because at that point, based on his talent and previous season's production, there may be some glimpse there where he could take that. But Sterling Shepard was a good wide receiver too for that team last season. So to just assume that he was no longer going to have any impact on that offense and that Brandon Marshall was just going to come in and then give Odell a run for his money was just naive. Now, we may see Brandon Marshall have a few big games, but Odell is the guy there. Without Odell, they can't move the ball because the run game is so horrendous. And Sterling Shepard is, to me, going to finish higher than Brandon Marshall this season.
Yeah, at this point, it looks like Evan Engram might finish higher than Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
Do you guys know who finished with the third most catches in week one? As of right now, I mean, we got the Vikings, Saints, and then the Chargers, Broncos still going on. But as of right now, who finished with the third most receptions week one?
Of any player? Or
any player.
Tariq Cohen.
Tariq Cohen was fourth.
Oh, damn.
He tied with Zach Ertz at 8.
Okay.
This player had 9.
Okay.
Let's see. Who are the high-powered offenses?
We were just talking about this team.
Is he on the Packers?
No, we were literally just talking about the Giants.
I'm going to guess Shane Vereen then.
Shane Vereen had 9 catches.
Okay. Yeah. I told one of my friends in another league that I'm not in. He said, he didn't start Gillisley because he panicked because he saw him third on the depth chart. That screwed him. So he only had Thomas Rawls, and then he saw Thomas Rawls was inactive. I said, listen, go pick up Shane Vereen then. And it worked out for him, especially in a PPR. So, I mean, it definitely worked out for him. Shane Vereen's an interesting guy. Not really sure if I'm going to race out to go get him. He might play well in certain spots. I mean, sure, you can. If you have the space on your bench, say if you lost somebody this week with some of these injuries, yeah, maybe grab a guy, grab Shane, see if he can do something for you here and there in a flex or a backup. But I'm not going to throw him out there every week.
No, I just thought it was an interesting stat.
Sure, absolutely. I was close though with my Tariq Cohen. I knew he was up there.
You were.
We'll get to him in a minute. Allen Robinson tore his ACL. He'll miss the rest of the season. I'm just going to say it's a shame we lost Allen Robinson, and I'm also going to say for all of us here, there's nobody else on the Jaguars you want as a receiver right now.
Marquise Lee.
Chris, maybe it's Marquise Lee, but I don't know. He had 4 targets, 0 catches, 0 yards. So not very impressive. I'm just saying, don't grab any of the Jaguars receivers, guys.
They were up so much, they were only running the ball.
Yeah, that's true. But with their defense, if they can get their defense playing like that, and Leonard Fournette, they're just going to try and run the ball anyways.
I'm just going to put this out there. Allen Hurns was a top 10 wide receiver by end of year 2 seasons ago. And he had 3 receptions on 4 targets for 42 yards in this game. So maybe, maybe he's the guy to own.
But you would have thought that last year too, and that over Marquise Lee, and Marquise Lee was better.
Yes, Marquise Lee came on stronger. Allen Robinson was awful last year, but let's talk about who was also awful, who really mattered was Blake Bortles, and they also did not have a Leonard Fournette or as good of a defense, so they were not moving the ball as well.
All right, honestly, I'm going to cut this off because we've spent way too much time on the Jaguars.
Okay. Yep.
Let's continue on. Danny Woodhead, surprise, surprise, got hurt his hamstring on a non-contact injury. They're suspecting he'll miss a significant amount of time. How much is uncertain. But it looked like, from what we saw, Terrence West started off strong, and then they got Buck Allen involved. Is Buck Allen a guy worth even picking up there, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. And Buck Allen is a guy who a couple years ago, when given the opportunity with Flacco, he had a couple really great PPR games, and even Sunday's game. I mean, like, you think that, you know, Danny Woodhead goes out and it's the Terrence West show, right? But it wasn't. I mean, sure, Terrence West was in there. He got 19 carries. Javorius Allen had 21 carries. So I think Buck Allen is going to be a guy I would rather play than Terrence West. I think I would still take Terrence West in a standard. I'm not excited about having either of these guys or having to play them. But in a PPR, I think I'd go with Javorius Allen.
I'm going to agree on half of that. I'm going to say that I would want Javorius Allen also in standard. Javorius Allen played 33 snaps, and West only played 27. Buck Allen is what we would consider the passing down back, and he was in more when the Ravens were up. They weren't trailing. So even though he's the passing down, I think that skews even more if the Ravens happen to be trailing. So that's my take on that. I also think that Buck Allen is the better running back out of the two. So I think that Buck Allen has real potential here. Woodhead hurt his hamstring. I believe it's the same one that was injured during the preseason. So he could be out 1 week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks. He's getting older. His recovery time isn't going to be that great. And if Buck Allen, you know, if he has a few weeks to prove himself, he's someone that I would roster.
I'm going to get to just a little bit more of Javorius Allen coming up when we discuss waiver wire. Last bit of news, and it's going to go quick because it's Kevin White on injured reserve again for his third year. Again. So 3 years in a row, injured reserve, only played 5 games in the NFL. That project's over.
Dude is done.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I hate that, you know, the guy struggled. So, I mean, he looked promising. He was the 7th overall pick. Supposed to be a top wide receiver. Couldn't get there. Health issues were just too much.
That was the same draft class as Amari Cooper, right?
Yeah, Amari Cooper was taken 4th, and Kevin White was taken 7th.
Yeah, I remember seeing a lot of debates on SportsCenter about Kevin White actually might be a better wide receiver overall, like talent-wise, than Amari Cooper. But, I mean, it's unfortunate that we're never going to get a chance to see that.
No. We'll really never know. It's really unfortunate, and I don't see any other team picking him up once the Bears do end up cutting ties with them. So it's really sad. But we move on, and as far as receivers go, not really a whole lot, except for one waiver wire ad, which we are going to talk about right now because we're moving on into the waiver wire section, the last segment of today's show. I wish this were a 2-hour show because we have so much we could talk about, but we do not have that kind of time. So let's get into the waiver wire. Guys, so on the top of my list is Tariq Cohen. So we have Tariq Cohen, Kenny Golladay, Cooper Kupp. We've got, you know, Javorius Allen, which we've already mentioned. We've got some tight ends that we can talk about. Jesse James, Austin Hooper. We got Nelson Agholor is another name that everybody should keep in mind after what he did. Of these guys and others that outperformed what everybody expected, who are a couple guys, Lucas, that you were the most impressed by and that you are going to go out and try to get this week?
Cohen looked amazing to me. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that he is a guy that I want on my team. It's not 100% what his usage is going to be, but I think the coaches would have to be blind and part stupid to not put the ball in this guy's hands more often. With Kevin White going down, I think that this means that the running backs are going to touch the ball about 40 times a game between Howard and Cohen, maybe more, possibly upwards of 50 times a game between the two. And Cohen really only needs about 15 touches to make something amazing happen. Another guy that I'm looking at for other reasons is Tolbert if you're a LeSean McCoy owner, go put Tolbert on your bench. Jonathan Williams is no longer there. Go get Tolbert.
Ugh. I just hate the way that sounds.
It's painful, but go get him. Kerwin Williams is someone that needs to be owned. We'll see what happens there. I'm not excited about it, but he is someone that needs to be owned as of right now, the way that things stand.
Let me ask you this. You say Kerwin Williams needs to be owned, but do you think he should be owned by people who don't own David Johnson or just the David Johnson owner?
We don't know. David Johnson could be out for 12 weeks. I think right. that the David Johnson owner should have already owned him. If you just assume that he is invincible, I know a lot of people don't like to handcuff. If you have the first, second, third, fifth overall draft pick and you spend it on a running back and there is a semi-clear-cut backup, you need to own him. Because who are you going to have? Are you going to have someone else's handcuff sitting on – I mean, because you should have 5 to 6 running backs on your team. One of those needs to be the handcuff for your star if you have a star and a clear-cut.
Mm-hmm.
Which – not that Kerwin is a clear-cut. But that's what it looks like.
Okay. All right. What about you, Chris? Are there any, of the guys I've listed or anybody else, the waivers that jump out at you that are guys that you're really going to race out there to try and get this week?
Yeah, I'm thinking if you're in need of a wide receiver, so say you had Allen Robinson and he went down and you don't have a lot of depth, Nelson Agholor, he was getting targeted by Wentz. I mean, 6 for 86 and a touchdown, a physical touchdown too, where he broke a tackle on 8 targets. But someone who you're probably not going to – that you're probably going to get that other people most likely won't claim is Jermaine Kearse. Look, I know it's the Jets, but 7 catches for 59 targets – or 59 targets. That would be huge, 59 targets. 7 catches for 59 yards on 9 targets – is pretty solid for a guy who really just got signed. I was expecting Robbie Anderson to be the guy, but maybe they're going with the veteran, and Jermaine Kearse could step up and be a good flex play for you.
Yeah, Jermaine Kearse is an interesting one. It's amazing how he came, from Seattle to Jets last week.
Yeah.
And he's already their number one target there. So very interesting to see that. Lucas mentioned it. I mean, my number one guy for this week is Tariq Cohen. I talked about Cooper Kupp in the Great Debate. I think he's a guy you definitely have to go get. He's going to be your PPR consistent guy. He may not put up, 4 for 76 and a touchdown each week, but I can definitely see somewhere in the realms of maybe, 5 or 6 catches, 50 yards. He's not getting the main coverage like Sammy Watkins is getting out there. So I think he's going to be a reliable receiver for this Rams offense. And I really like what Sean McVay's doing there, at least from what I saw week one. It's too early to really get too hyped up, but I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. You mentioned Nelson Agholor was impressive. I want to talk about the tight ends, because there were a couple tight ends that went off, and we gotta uncover the truth about these guys. Set some things straight. Like Austin Hooper. Not doing that again?
No, he's not doing what he did again.
No, no. Chris and I actually talked off the air about that, because I was talking about the Bears game, impressed by some things that I saw and all that. I mentioned, Austin Hooper, the only reason I feel he did what he did was because, you basically had blown coverage from a miscommunication in the backfield. Not that that secondary for the Bears is really any good anyways. But, hey, it kept Julio Jones to only 66 yards. That I was impressed by. So, Austin Hooper getting all those yardage, 2 touchdowns, or was it
just one touchdown?
One touchdown, that's right. Yeah, 1 touchdown, that's not happening. No. That's not going to happen every week. This is clearly, they couldn't get the running game going yesterday with the Bears. Bears were really focused, keying in on that running game. That was their plan. That's what they said in their press conference. They were focusing on the running game. And, you know, with Julio, they just they did what they could do. And it worked almost to a win. Almost. It's just, you know, I'm not even going to get into all that because that's just too much. And that's for another type of show. So Austin Hooper, I think he's a guy that should be owned. But I don't think he's a guy you should be putting out there in your lineups.
Right. If you look at the top six tight ends from this week, they all have one thing in common except for Austin Hooper. And that was they all had at least 8 targets. The rest of them had 9. James, Witten, Clay, Ertz, and Delanie Walker all had at least 8 targets. Ertz was 8 for 8. They all caught most of their targets except for Clay, who was 4 of 9. James looks to be a volume-dependent standard. He had 2 touchdowns and he had 6 receptions, so in PPR it's going to be pretty great. But he only had 41 yards on those 6 receptions. So in a standard, if he's not scoring touchdowns, he's not someone that it looks like I want, because most of his receptions are only 7-8 yards, as to where some of these guys have receptions that are further downfield. You'll see Clay have bigger plays. I think that he could end up being a pretty decent tight end. Zach Ertz is going to have a big year. 8 of 8 for 93 yards. He was the only tight end in the top 5 this week who did not have a touchdown. If he gets in the end zone, he's in the top 3. They're going to continue to use him. Wentz and him are on the same page, obviously, with 100% catch rate. Not a fluke. Ertz is a great player. You saw the connection in the preseason. I think that is going to continue, and it would not surprise me if Ertz finishes as a top 6 tight end by the end of the season.
You know, that's some good points you make. And, you know, Jesse James is a guy that, you know, of the two between him and Hooper, I do like Jesse James. The only problem I have is that this was a weird game for the Steelers. You know, Antonio Brown got his, but Le'Veon Bell wasn't all there. Martavis Bryant really didn't get much. You know, so it was a weird game to me. I don't feel like this is going to be the game script going forward. I don't know if there's enough work there for Jesse James to be an every week type starter.
It's the beat writers didn't think that he was anything special. They picked up Vance McDonald, who I think is a better athlete. So as he gets worked in, we will see. Jesse James, right now, he looked like a smart play. 16 points, depending on your league. Like I said, PPR, if you have someone who is not performing and you want to throw James in until he doesn't perform for you, I'm okay with that. But there are better guys out there.
One more player that I want to mention before we start to wrap this up. You know, another guy I wanted to bring up is Corey Coleman. He's another guy I think that needs to be owned. DeShone Kizer, he was his preferred wideout as opposed to Kenny Britt, who got the hype all offseason. Like, yeah, this is going to be the target. I never believed that for a second. I just wasn't feeling that. So Corey Coleman, I think, is a guy that you guys need to go grab out there. As far as my top 4, like if I'm putting like the top 4 receivers, and I'm including those receivers, Coleman, Galladay, Kupp, and Aguilar, I'm going to say it goes Kupp, Coleman, Aguilar, Galladay. And the only reason I say that is because Galladay seems more like a boom or bust type player to me. I'm not really, maybe I move Galladay over Aguilar, actually. Maybe Aguilar would be last for me.
See,
I don't know.
Aguilar, I think, will be a bigger part of that offense. Torrey Smith is going to catch a couple big passes, but his targets are going to be low. Aguilar had 8 targets, and he caught 6 of them. He seems to be on the same page. And honestly, from what I saw, Aguilar looked better than Alshon Jeffrey. Alshon didn't look that great to me. Galladay is on a team that they have a lot of options as well. And Marvin Jones looked fine, albeit Galladay had that great diving catch. But Golden Tate's the guy there, and we didn't see much out of Ebron, which I don't think will continue the entire season. And then they also have the pass-catching back in Theo Riddick. So we'll see if Stafford ends up throwing as many times per game and if the targets are there. I wouldn't expect Galladay to average 7 targets per game going forward. I would expect more of five targets with three catches. I could be wrong, but Marvin Jones looked pretty good as well. So
you like Aguilar over Galladay? Do you like Aguilar over Corey Coleman?
Corey Coleman had 5 for 6, 53 yards and a touch. I'm still not thrilled with the Browns' offense. I love Crowell. I think Kaiser has some room to grow, being a 21-year-old quarterback. They're going to have to get on the same page. Corey Coleman I like, but I'm still a little bit nervous. Cooper Kupp is someone that I actually really like. I think that he's going to end up being the go-to target volume receiver for Jared Goff. So in a PPR, I know he only got 6 targets this game, but he caught 4 of them for 76 yards, so he can make plays.
And he was tied for the most targets. So that's you know, 6 targets is the highest anybody got. So he was tied for that, right. Cooper Kupp. So I guess what you're saying is if you had to put him in order, it would be Cooper Kupp, Nelson Aguilar, then who else?
Yeah, I might even say that Aguilar is the guy to own because Wentz is looking pretty good. I think that Aguilar is going to be the guy to own here, and then Cooper Kupp followed by Galladay and Coleman I kind of have tied now.
All right. Well, listen, guys, I mean, I think that regardless, though, I think there's one thing we can agree on. Tariq Cohen has to be the number one waiver wire pickup.
I think that he is a great waiver wire pickup to have this week. I agree. Kerwin Williams is another one, and Buck Allen. Those are guys that need to be owned. And like I said, if you have McCoy, just do yourself a favor and go put Tolbert on your bench. I think McCoy will play the majority of the season, but if he happens to get injured for a game here or there, you'll be happy that you had Tolbert to fill in for him, and it'll save you the headache and save your waiver priority trying to scramble and go pick him up.
Yeah. I mean, one last thing, and because I didn't really get a whole lot of say into my 2 cents as a Bears fan, what I think of the Cohen situation, I talked about this off air with Chris, and that the way I look at the Bears, I mean, we mentioned, Kevin White's injury, him going down, obviously, he's the pass-catching option. Obviously, he's not going to run